Bailey and Hardy, Ultrasound Assistant, is proudly sponsored by Protein Rebel. Have you ever had super twitchy legs, after a long run where you can't get to sleep and they're just like twitchy, twitchy, twitchy? I have. And the only thing that has ever sorted them out is this Protein Rebel Power Up Seawater Magnesium. All you need to do is take 1 teaspoon of Power Up every evening, mix with water or juice, and it helps to improve your sleep, it honestly does, reduce restless and twitchy legs, and power up your body ready for your next run. Protein Rebel are a UK-based company who provide natural nutrition for runners, and their products include marine collagen, which I've also tried, which is amazing, this magnesium, which is amazing, a vegan protein powder, and award-winning maple syrup gels. And they have been kind enough to gift me a bundle to give to you, dear listener. One lucky listener will win a bundle in September 2024. And that bundle includes a tin of Accelerate vegan protein powder, a tin of Run Easy marine collagen, a tin of Power Up seawater magnesium, and 9 of these delightful Maple Ignite energy gels. All you need to do, head to Instagram, go to our link tree, enter the competition. The link is in the link tree. Put your email in, Bob's your uncle, but this will only work in September 2024. I love Protein Rebel. I really, really do. They sent me stuff free to try, and then I started buying it. And you can buy it too, using a discount code, which is also in our bio on Instagram. You'll get 15% off. So head over to Instagram at Ultrasound System Pod, fill in the form, enter the competition, get your discount code. And remember, listener, this is a grown-up podcast for grown-up people with some very immature, silly themes and lots of swearing. So if you're in the car on the school run, I'd advise you fucking switch it off now. All the best. Welcome to the Bailey and Hall Ultrasound System. This is episode 76 with me, Ali Bailey, and my co-presenter, climate hypocrite, and attention seeker, Damien Hall.
Hi.
Hello.
How are you?
Great. Did you like my new introduction to you?
It's probably my favourite one.
It's good, isn't it?
Well, I didn't go that far.
You are a little bit of an attention seeker. How are you? What's going on? How's your first... What's on your cup? Is that a shark?
Yes, it's a hammerhead shark. This is Steve, took my son to see Steve, is it Brackshaw?
Backshaw.
Backshaw. A while ago, and I think we got this mug.
Oh my God, it's so good. Can I have it?
Nope.
Oh. Okay, I like sharks. So, what's I going to say to you? Yes, how have you been? What's been going on? I know what's been going on because I was there, but I'm going to ask you for the sake of the listener, what's been going on in the world of Damien Hall?
It's about a week and a half since the Tour de Gion, I think. So I've been eating a fair bit of cake and trying to recover from that. But it was, the big exhausting adventure I wanted.
Was it the big dance?
It was the bigger dance.
The biggest dance.
The bigger, yeah. It was quite a brutal bimble alley.
Savagery at its very best.
We
actually heard from the queen of the tour last week, Kirsty Reid. Did you listen to that episode yet?
Absolutely, yeah. And I saw Kirsty out there, and you know better than anyone because you were getting voice notes from both of us. How sort of measured and sensible and just good and solid her run was compared to what happens when you what's the word? Go foolishly fast and
foolishly fast.
You get much more jumbled voice notes, don't you? More confused messages.
You do. But you know what would be good? If anybody here is a music producer or knows one, can you get in touch? Because I will send you both sets of voice notes and you can do a kind of like a, you could put them together like a sort of rap. Like, do you remember when in the 90s when there were those call and response songs? Like there was one called like Fuck You by Cam, like Hive apostrophe Ron, and it was like a fuck you to his girlfriend, and he was like, and then she released one back like a fuck, and it's called Fuck You Right Back, and it was really good. So we could do that with your voice notes and Kirsty's voice notes, with yours being an absolute man on the edge of a breakdown and Kirsty just simply asking for some fresh focaccia and maybe a margarita pizza.
I think we definitely should. Yes.
So yes, you're
talking. I don't ever want to listen to those voice notes back. Please delete them.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I've actually saved a lot of them because I knew that I thought you might delete them. You can delete for all, but you can't delete for all because I've got some of them saved.
So
So
this is basically blackmail, which isn't fitting with some of the other themes of the race.
I don't think that it is blackmail because you sent them to me.
We need to look at the definition of blackmail.
Why would you say that blackmail is the theme of one of the themes of the race? Why would you say that blackmail
Well,
is one of the themes of the race?
I can't remember if you covered this in the previous podcast, but there was some all sorts of interesting shenanigans at
Well,
the
let me interrupt you there because we did mention it, but what I was lucky enough to witness at the Tour de Gion was the elite race and the proper grown-ups race. And that was quite a thing of wonder because they're two completely fucking separate races. Like seeing the people at the top end who are taking 3 days, seeing the people at the back end taking four, is two completely separate things. So you were obviously at the top end of it. So you were in the midst of the scandal as it unfolded. Forgive the pun, because there was a letter involved. Unfolded, weren't you?
yes, I kind of was. I don't think really there's much. I don't really think there's much scandal, but there's grey areas, and the Tour de Gion is not a race. Well, this is what was confusing. It's not really a race that clamps down on rules very much historically.
It
So, for
has no
example,
fucking mandatory kit.
well, I love that. I love that. So you carry two silver blankets, a phone. ID. I think there's one other item. They don't
Yeah,
even
there
ask
is
you
a
to put.
small piece of tiger's eye that I made you carry for the whole event.
I would have won it without that. It weighed me right down. One other item. They don't even say you have to carry a waterproof, which I really like. It's grown up. It's grown up. Very loose mandatory kit, which they don't check. One of the big things that's frustrated some of us in the past is some of the local runners don't necessarily stick to the switchbacks. So a lot of the climbs and descents, they're sort of zigzags up and down the mountain, and you've got the flags are at like the end of the zag or the zig before you switch back. And often local runners, they just cut right up or cut right down them. And that has frustrated some of us in the past, and we've felt, a real dilemma of do we follow them or do we stick to the path? And I'll be totally honest, I've got in the habit of following them. With a little bit of sort of shame attached, but that's what the other runners are doing. But this year, actually, especially John Kelly and Sabrina Verger were very keen to try and end that. So we chatted to all the other elite runners, and as far as I could tell, people did stick to the route, which was something. However,
What about the local runners? Were they sticking to the route?
as far as I could tell, I didn't see anyone like properly cutting switchbacks.
Because you can really take a lot of route off, can't you? Didn't Galen say you could take like kilometres off?
Yeah, Galen Reynolds analysed one long descent, and it was a kilometre quick, like less, if you did the switch or cut all the switchbacks. So it's really significant. That's just one descent out of what, 20 odd. But the what I'm this year is we had Francois Daine running, who's a bit of a sort of star above the rest of us, and he had a whole media team around him. They're doubtless making a film. There's lots of social media, and he often early on, lovely guy by the way, it was nice to chat to him. He's twice the height of me.
He's a man mountain, isn't he?
He's twice as good as well. But he would nearly always have like photographers and filmmakers running with him, which was a little bit annoying, if I'm honest. They could get in the way. But another runner, who I know, accused him of having sort of planning to have pacers, and sent him a message in the race, apparently, sort of saying, "I know you have paces. I've got evidence. If you don't quit, what was it? If you don't quit
If you
by
don't
midnight."
tell people what you've done by midnight, I'm going to tell
I love
everyone.
the "by midnight." That's
Me
quite
too.
like a
That's
Western film.
very
Yeah.
dramatic.
Then I will. What was it? Then I will release the evidence or something. So this is like mid-race, and apparently it was a letter, which seems brilliantly old-fashioned as well. I like to think it was attached to an arrow and it landed in a tree
Yeah,
right
it
next to
did.
Francois.
It was delivered by a marmot to an aid station in a little canister.
And then Francois's team, which is a big team, responded mid-race.
What do you mean, Francois' team? What does that mean? Does that mean his media team? Does that
I
mean
think his
his
social media
crew?
team, as far as I know, I don't know if they
He's
consulted.
Team Salomon, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
They sort of responded mid-race. Now, like Francois, because of his level of fame, he is the sort of guy that also, people are going to turn up and just run with him. So I've got a little bit of sympathy for that sort of thing, where possibly he isn't, arranging pacers or wanting people to run with him, but people, both media team and, strangers, actually, it was quite nice running into early aid stations near him, because you'd get much more cheering, and you'd think, yeah, this is all right.
I think it would have been better if he didn't told his team to just be silent when anyone else came in and just stare at them, or slow, or even better, slow clap them into the aid station.
So yeah, so Francois ended up winning, as probably people would have, he would have been the favorite, but yeah, this little bit of a cloud. But then Martin, yeah, sort of apologized publicly afterwards. Martin finished third, which was his best run. I've known him there for all three of my tours. I've met him. Great guy, Swiss guy. And he did apologize, for sort of making those accusations. Yeah, I guess Martin would do
Did
things
he
differently.
apologise for making the accusations, or did he apologise for the way he made them?
Yeah, good question. Good question. Might have to go back and reread his post. I mean, it's slightly odd. I don't mean to criticize Martin in public. I like Martin a lot. I mean, I would have personally like gone to the race rather than gone to the individual runner. But also, mid-race is a strange time to do all that as well. But yeah, Martin's sort of been very apologetic about it. But then what was weird for me amongst all that is another runner got disqualified, a runner I knew quite well from the previous year, Cornell, who's a Romanian runner, who was running really strongly. He got disqualified for being crewed outside of a crew point, which sounds quite bad, but is the sort of thing that lots of us has been sort of overlooked at the tour.
It's
There's a
certainly
sort of mill.
overlooked in the what was it I said, public race, but in the big race, like at
Right.
outside Donas, everybody was outside the tent at Donas because it was full and it was hot and there were cars parked all down the road, and that's where everybody was getting their stuff from. Like, we were outside on the floor at Donas, not in the crew tent, and there was, like I say, lots of cars, and he was crewed at a bar, wasn't he? So it wasn't the argument. He was first, he got there. The checkpoint wasn't ready, so they set up in a bar down the road for him, and then that was that. But they.
Yeah, they said they arrived at the checkpoint an hour early. They weren't allowed to set up, so they decided to set up somewhere else. And yeah, that is against the rules. And I, I'd rather not. I'd rather that wasn't happening in the race. However, they disqualified him straight away. And a time penalty is a, I think, just a fairer thing, to be honest. It just seems so harsh so early in the race to go, right, you're out, when the tour is generally very lax about things like that. So it was quite surprising. They're suddenly clamping down, and then you get all this mysterious stuff around Francois. And maybe some pictures of him sort of, sleeping aided away from aid stations as well. So you had all this sort of, and I'm not meaning to cast aspersions on Francois. He's an incredible athlete and very likable guy, but you've got all this strange stuff swirling around here, and then someone else does something and they're like, bang, you're out.
The other
So
thing
that was,
that I mentioned last week was it Benet? Is that his name, the guy that was the second?
oh, the French guy, yeah.
Yeah. So he gets he's so the Romanian's out, and then suddenly Benet's at the front, right? And then suddenly Benet gets very sick, and he has to stop at a refuge, and he is held at that refuge for like 5 fucking hours.
Yeah,
Where and
God,
then
God, God,
Francois overtakes him, and then
God.
we're all like, Benet's out the race because he's ill. Like, that's what we were hearing. We were at like Cogne at the time, and we were like, this is so exciting. There's so much stuff. He's really, really ill. But then suddenly he's released again. And Francois's like a couple of hours ahead of him. And Benet's out again. And I'm like, what's going on here? Because it looks to me like possibly if you were going to go into the conspiracy theories, like they are trying to help Francois to win because it makes a better story for the film, possibly. Maybe. Because that's
No
weird.
comments.
Letting someone out, if they're that ill, like he came second in the end, didn't he?
Yeah, no,
That's
he went past
weird.
me once or twice. He looked very, very strong. Yeah, I mean, Francois is an amazing athlete, and always seemed very, very likable. Sorry to be boringly diplomatic, but yeah, the tour's always been a bit of a. I've just done a blog and referred to like the Wild West atmosphere of it. Yeah, you never really feel like you're never all that sure what the rules are, and then usually not clamped down on at all. So it was a strange year. It was a strange, and at one point, Martin did go past me in the night and rant and rave about Francois. I can't really remember.
No, he didn't.
I
Didn't
mean,
say anything to you.
he may not have. Yeah,
No.
yeah. So, yeah.
Like
So
how
there you go.
you went past that marmot who was singing Adele songs to you. What was I going to say? The funny thing about you on those voice notes is your voice changed, and it got to the point where I didn't actually recognize you anymore. It was funny. Can I ask you a question? Do you think you broke any of the rules during the Tour de Géant?
Yeah.
Do
Well, I didn't have a crew. I didn't have a crew, and I don't mind admitting. Yeah, a friend met me at a crew point and acted as my crew without a pass. I mean, effectively, if he had that pass, which was sitting on my bed, that was
He was
legitimate.
the
But
only person. Was it AJ? Was it Drew?
they're both hanging around. AJ helped me at a crew point.
Drew
Yeah,
was a
when I was.
driver. AJ was a crew. But he had a
Okay.
pass. He just wasn't wearing it. So really, there was
Yeah.
nothing wrong with that at all. Like, it just was like the rule break was he wasn't wearing his pass because it was at home. Like, we all had to have a pass at the tour. If you were a crew, you had to have this bloody pass. It said trailer assistant on the front of it.
Would they check yours or not?
Well, I was the first checkpoint. We had a press pass and we had a trailer assistant pass, but I was worried that me and Elise both being in the checkpoint would mean that they would disqualify us. So, because there's two people in the checkpoint instead of one. But as the race went on, some people's crews were five deep. They were rolling five deep. And it was like, okay, they're just turning a blind eye to it because they can't police it because there's too many people. And I think at that point, in that point in the race, they're kind of like, whatever. But at your point, there's all eyes on basically, I felt like it was a setup. I felt from a perspective of watching it from the outside, I felt like the whole Francois thing was a setup to make that film the way they wanted that film to end. So yeah, I wish they'd done that on the arc with my film and just taken out the entire female, the 38 people in front of me so that I could have won. Recovery from Tour de Géant, what does that look like? I've got notes. I've made notes, guys. I've made
Oh,
notes. So
gosh.
what's your recovery? What's it been like? It's been a week and a half.
Well, my toes are still very pins and needly, but they're not painful. My HRV is still low. I still look like I'm 70. But I've had some good night's sleep. I'm just about stopping having second breakfast, although that is a sad. Isn't that the most devastating post-race moment
Need to
where?
stop that. You don't need to stop that. I'm going to
Okay.
let you have that. You can
Okay,
have the
cakes.
second breakfast for another
10 o'clock
3 or 4
cakes.
months.
Okay.
You don't eat cakes.
10 o'clock cakes.
What cakes have you been eating?
All the cakes. Well, there was some cakes.
Cakes have got eggs
Chocolate.
in.
10 o'clock cakes. Flapjacks. Things. Yeah. Well, yeah, I hate that moment where you realize, yeah, the 10 o'clock cakes are just pure greed and not really merited.
I think
But
it
yeah.
takes you fucking, not you, generally it takes me months to like get back to eating properly, like eating, like not eating 76 meals a day.
Well, I'm just at that turning point, I think. Just at that turn point. I'm still having. Yeah, no, I'm sleeping all right.
Are you still having protein powder and everything?
Not everything. I'm still
I think
trying
one of
to.
the most disgusting things I've ever witnessed is a grown man putting two spoonfuls of protein powder into an Alpro coconut yogurt, not mixing it up properly, so there's little dusty balls, and eating it. And
You
being
went
like,
on
this
about
is
my little
fine.
dusty balls quite a lot.
Absolutely disgusting. You might
It
as well
was nice.
snort it.
The grown-up answer to the question is, yeah, I am trying to still concentrate on getting decent protein in.
You done any running yet?
Yes, I've done two or three short runs. Felt a bit slow and clunky. I got a very slight weakness in my ankle, but it's not really prohibitive. But say my coach did put me 10 miles for the weekend, and I just did six because I just thought, because we got a question about recovery, haven't we? I think
Yeah, we have.
I just did six because I kind of felt like actually that's enough for the ankle.
Wow, what's Coach Roach going to say about that? Oh my
If
God, Damien, I'm so fucking disappointed in you, you fucking loser. That's what he's going to say.
He's never disappointed in me, except the time I ran 29 miles instead of 20. Other than that,
What did he
he's
say then?
respect your body.
All right, Coach
It might
Roach.
have been in capitals as well.
Did he?
Yeah, and then he apologized a few minutes later and said that was an awesome run.
Wow. Tough love from Coach Roach. Can I ask a
Yeah.
question? Another question.
No, go on.
What happened at the end of that race?
Oh, well, I had a new t-shirt I wanted to show off, and I had a new flag I wanted to wave around a bit.
Yeah.
So, when I was last on, I was in the midst of my dilemma of whether to run the Tour de Géant because they announced a, well, they didn't even announce it. We discovered a new high carbon partner, Ford, just 2 weeks out from the race. And I felt really conflicted because I'd publicly pledged several times not to do races with high carbon sponsors. But the complicated thing was, I think I went into it last time, so let me know if I'm getting boring. You normally do,
No,
but
because this is like a this is a catch up on that because we never
okay.
really got to the conclusion on that, did we?
Yeah, so they described Ford as a partner. So they weren't like the headline sponsor. They weren't the next level of partners, but they were like a second tier partner. A partner is quite an ambiguous word. So the green runners agree that, like, big events need more vehicles. And I was glad, that I would get to an aid station and my drop bag would be there ahead of me, and that needs a vehicle to do that, for example. And obviously all the aid stations are stocked with food, et cetera, and that needs vehicles. So we're not against that, but we're against high carbon companies sponsoring trail running events or running events to promote themselves when usually almost all car companies actually are still 90% of their sales are ICE vehicles, fossil fuel dependent vehicles, when that we scientists are screaming at us to rapidly transition away from fossil fuels. So they're all being deliberately slow to try and get maximum profits and sort of advertise themselves overall. So if Ford, sorry, if the tour was like, if Ford were only advertising their EV, we would be okay with that. We think that's reasonable, but they're advertising their whole brand, and trying to sell more vehicles and promote
They
themselves.
weren't even just using EVs, were they? Because every vehicle I
No,
saw was not an EV.
I saw one or two, but mostly not. And what really unsettled me actually was just before the start, we had these traditional dancers in their costumes for like the Alpine region. These big red costumes, they look fabulous, like dancing around, and they're dancing around a Ford car, right in the start of the
Not a
race. I just
Ford
thought,
KA, a car, CAR, like a big Ford car.
It was, I thought it was pretty disgusting, to be honest. Trying to mend blend these two worlds that are just so different. So finally, I think when we last spoke, the tour hadn't replied to us. So the Green Runners, both sort of the Green Runners and independently, we sent them six emails, asking, just asking for clarification on the relationship. And they finally got back to us, and they quite carefully worded it that they were sort of, needed those vehicles for the terrain. And so for me, there wasn't enough there, although I was suspicious, there wasn't enough to go, right, I'm not doing the race. I had, had my suspicions, and they were sort of came true when I got to Courmayeur, and you could see Ford, sort of Ford advertised quite heavily. But by then, I mean, financially and in other ways too, I was sort of committed to doing the race. But I'd already, created a design, designed and ordered a t-shirt and a I'd already ordered the banner a while ago, actually. So I thought, well, the next best thing other than not running is to do the race and protest in some way. And I've been debating, well, I was debating with you as well, wasn't I? What was the more impactful thing to do? Was making the statement of not running more impactful than running and making some sort of statement? And I'd sort of elected for the latter. So when I came in to finish the race, pretty tired. I'd had, I think less than 30 minutes sleep over 3 nights. Came up to the finish line up the little ramp and had my little t-shirt on, waved my little flag around. And
I
I'd
don't think
forgotten
you
there was
did
a
wave
live
your little flag.
YouTube.
You stood there with your fucking flag. Very, it looked very, very angry.
It's quite funny you say that because I was just really tired and I was
I
just like, I
know.
don't know what to do. So I stood there with the flag. I'd actually forgotten there was a live YouTube channel. So that was an added bonus. But then I sort of hadn't really given much thought what to do. I didn't want to make it awkward for the staff. And normally you're interviewed live, like live on a microphone while you're standing there. And then last year, actually, I went straight into like the TV studio for a YouTube interview as well, straight afterwards. And I actually thought, I don't want to make it awkward for those people. They all seem really lovely. I'll just turn around and walk the other way. I've made my point.
I thought
So
you'd
that's
fallen
kind
off the
of
gantry.
there was a good chance of that happening. So that's what I did. It turns out, it sounds like from what I hear, that actually the walking away without getting my medal was more offensive to some of the staff than me sort of waving my flag and the rude words on my t-shirt. But that's what I did, and I feel good for doing that. I feel like I had to make a point, and that's what happened.
I'm also going to make a point, sorry, but I'm going to make a point, and that point is that there's been some people who have been who've had their opinions on this, and their opinions are not really opinions that are helpful to this narrative about why you did that race. And I think that from my angle, as somebody that is a normal person, you're an elite athlete, so you obviously get a place at that race. Sometimes you pay for it, sometimes you don't. But you train really hard for it, and you've trained. How long do you reckon you trained for this race for? How many months?
Well, it's probably like sort of, I suppose, 2 to 3 months of specific training. I was sleeping in an altitude tent most nights, which isn't the most fun
But
thing to do.
before that, you're still like working towards it, right? And you're still
Yeah, well, I did do
focused on what
another
it is
race
you're
since
doing.
like March, I suppose, an A
Right.
race. So I guess from all of that time, I was building towards it. Yeah.
Right. Now let's look at that from a normal person perspective, me. So I enter a race as a green runner, and it's a trip of a lifetime. It's the only time I'm ever going to get to do it, and I'm like, I've entered this race because it is in line with my values, and it's got all everything's right and everything's correct and everything's in line, and I want to go to that part of the world, and I'm very excited, and I'm going to go and have a lift share, and I'm not going to use an airplane, whatever the fuck it is that I'm doing, right? Then 2 weeks before, they announce that there is this high carbon sponsor. It's my fucking life. I've paid for this stuff and I've trained really, really hard. And I believe that there is more than one way to protest, right? And I also believe that silence makes you complicit. So if you're not going to say anything, and if you're going to fucking just walk away and not do anything, that actually makes you complicit in the thing that you're trying to protest against, right? I think it's better to make a louder noise. So I think what you did was actually super brave. And I would say that because I like you. But I do think that if you said to anyone else, get to the end of a race, stand there, unfurl that flag, wear that t-shirt, and don't take a fucking medal, they wouldn't be able to do it. They just wouldn't be able to do it. And it fucks me off that people in this, with even with like the plant-based stuff or the environmental stuff, there's all that yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but stuff. It's just not fucking helpful. And I feel that if we're all gonna, we should all just try and be a little bit more helpful. And I just, that's just want to say that publicly because it fucking annoyed me that people wanted to say something, and the very people that are saying something are the people that don't do anything. They don't actually do anything. We're not asking you to not do stuff. We're asking you to do stuff. And part of the Green Runners pledges is to speak out, which I think you did very eloquently, even though I cut the O off your flag, and I'm sorry for cutting the O off your flag in the photo. Okay. Anywho, let's move
Thank you.
on.
That was very kind.
I am very kind sometimes, but don't worry, because later we've got a Pennine Way quiz coming up, which will show you up for the idiot that you are. You're supposed to ask me what I've been doing, you fucking narcissist.
What have you been up to, Ali?
Well, funny you should ask that, actually, because I've been working on a
Anyway, out of time, I
workshop.
think.
Yeah, I've been working on a workshop in Brecon. It's been very hard
Oh.
work.
Good
Yeah,
weather.
no, awful weather. I've been working on my workshop, and now I'm starting training for my 200-mile race in December. That's fun,
Tell me
isn't
more
it?
about the workshop. How was that?
Well, it was a workshop. There was some running, and there was some talking, and there was some brain work, and it was really great. And one of the things that came out of the workshop that I would like to ask you is that some of these people were quite experienced, and some of them were new. And the ones that were new were like to ultra running, and the ones that were new were like throwing themselves in at the deep end. Like there was this guy who's like, "Oh yeah, I've just run 100K along the Thames," and I'm like, "Fuck it out!" Like he hadn't really done very much before. You know, these middle class men who are quite fit and just can do things. And we were talking about various stuff out on this run, and he said to me that we were talking about social media and Strava and how it has an impact on comparison. And how you can end up comparing yourself to people that are totally ridiculous to compare yourself to. And he said that Strava has allowed him to see how other people train, including the elite. So he was using Tom Evans as an example. I'm not a fan of Tom Evans, as we all know. And I don't follow Tom Evans on Strava, and I don't know how much stuff he actually puts on his Strava, but you put pretty much everything on yours, right?
Yeah.
Including when you go out with me and you write things like taking a newbie out for a jog or
Super
slow
easy.
walk with a friend, things like that, right? That's what you call those runs. He said that because he can see how those people train, he can copy their training, and he gets frustrated because he does exactly the same training as they do, but he's not as good as them. And that makes him frustrated and makes him compare himself and makes him basically then go into overdrive on socials and start doing everything that they're doing, drinking Huel, eating lard, jumping in Lumi ice baths, like getting tummy upsets on the UTMB, but then not really being able to say that because their sponsor is a major fucking sports nutrition brand, that sort of thing, right? Did you find this for your athletes?
It's a great question. I mean, there's at least a couple of things jump out at me. One is, especially with say Tom Evans, as far as I know, yeah, he's a full-time athlete. So after his run, he can just go back to bed in theory, as far as I know. The rest of us are going to work if we call this work. But most of us, yeah, have got busy lives around that. He doesn't have a family either, as far as I know. So he can sort of do the Kenyan thing almost to go back to bed and maybe getting up for a double run later on. But yeah, he's in theory recovering really well. living a different, totally different lifestyle away from you know, Strava, which is going to hugely benefit him. The other another thing that jumps out is simply that annoying sort of genetic natural talent thing, where some of us unfortunately are just born with genetic talents that the rest of us might not have. And Tom Evans definitely falls into that category. He was, I forget if he was 1500 meters or 5K, like junior champion or like second in the country or something. So he's got, as a kid, so he's got like, yeah, extraordinary talent that if we all train the same, we will not all turn out the same athletes. So he has gifts. Same as say Kilian Jornet. It's quite famous actually, like people trying to mimic Kilian Jornet's training and just getting overtrained and broken, basically. I wouldn't recommend anyone tries to do that. He's often training like 20, 25 hours a week. People
Fucking
like me and John
hell.
Kelly. Yeah. I mean, me and John Kelly are doing, you know, 10 to 12 hours, maybe 15 in big training blocks. So yeah, those two things stand out. And then also, I think just patience, because if you're new to this sport, we've discussed before how it might take up to 8 years to reach your sort of aerobic potential. So I found, I think it was after about 3 years of good training, I was starting to be sort of competitive at things like the Dragon's Back and stuff. So, but then on top of
That
that,
was
I
when
all,
Dragon's Back was easy, though. It was only 5 days.
yeah, we had to navigate back then.
It was only 5 days, though.
To navigate. So, there was, but also I already had an aerobic background because I was really into hiking and mountaineering and played a lot of football. So I was already quite fit. So that 3 years really probably wasn't 3 years. It was probably, you know, 6, 7 years already, really, in a way. So yeah, some patience. So another good month, another good month, another good month, another year. That is what's going to build that consistency, that boring word that is so sort of important to us. That's what's going to build, yeah, improve us and get us towards our potential. So that, I guess those are my 3 points. And unfortunately, the other thing is, the chance of getting injured by basically copying an elite athlete who's been training most of their life, trying to, I don't know, you know, where this per person or these people are coming from, their sort of more immediate background of fitness. But yeah, the chance of getting injured if they try and copy that are reasonably high. And then they just, yeah, that puts them back. So, comparison is the thief of joy, of course, as well. I mean, I hardly ever look at Strava now I'm on there, but like the amount of times you go out, you do a run and you feel like, oh, that was, yeah, I feel good about today's run. And then in previous years, I'd go on Strava and go, oh, I got a massive spider on my leg.
Cute. Let's have a look.
No, it just went up my shorts.
Did it?
I'll show you if you
Are you
want.
going to panic? No, I don't want to see it.
Oh.
Never torn up your shorts. Is it actually a spider? Or is it something else?
Oh, okay. I can't
It's
pick
not
it
very, I
up.
don't think it's very massive, listener. I think it's actually little. And the spider.
Oh dear.
Yeah,
Where
so
were we? No, I was
we're
trying to
talking
make my
about
final point there. Yeah,
comparison.
comparison. Yeah. So in the past, I would often do a run I was really happy with, and then I'd make the mistake of looking on Strava, and there'd always be someone. There's always someone who's done it faster or longer. So you know, quite quickly you'd go, oh, I don't feel good about my run anymore because someone else did something else. You know, and I mean, that's just a pointless game to play.
The only
Yeah, try
person
not
you
to
should
look.
compare yourself to is previous versions of yourself. And that is not in a, I used to be younger and fitter way, because you were, if you, your previous version of yourself will always be younger, but in a, how far has my brain come to the point where I don't really give a shit about comparing myself to other people? We all do it, don't we? But I had a conversation with your flatmate, John, at the tour about this, because I did a bit of the Mendip Way a few years ago with Julius. And I was like, that was a really good run. And the next day, he went out and did that bit of the Mendip Way in a third of the time that I'd done it in. And I was like, oh, it just flattened the whole thing. But then it's like,
But
fucking
it
John
shouldn't,
Kelly,
should
isn't
it?
it?
That's a
No.
it's a shame, isn't it? And I don't care. But also, I've done so many races where, in the past, especially UTMB is the classic one, right? I would look at my rivals. I say my rivals. I mean, they didn't even know who I was. But and I'd go, wow, he did 120 miles that week, and then the DNF, and I would cruise, you know, cruise past them.
And win.
You know, when I'd
That
done
time you
less
won the
training,
UTMB.
I did
Yeah.
win UTMB in 2018. Yeah, there's a small caveat to that, but we'll put that in the show notes. Yeah, so it doesn't, yeah, massive training doesn't mean success in races either. So yeah, that's all I've got to
So
say.
also, You can't see everything on Strava, can you? Like you say, you can't see the recovery, you can't see what they're doing after, you can't see if they've gone to see a physio straight after, you can't see if they've like got in a sauna, you can't see any of it. And so it's all bollocks. And at the end of the day, it's like learning every word to a fucking Adele album, going into karaoke and then being surprised when you don't sound like her. They're outliers, they're talented. There's more to it than fucking just copying the running. But I was just really surprised because I've never come across that before. I came across it quite a lot of the weekend of people being like, I just do what so and so does. And then I'm like, why the fuck would you do that? And I suppose that's the danger of the internet, isn't it?
Very much so. But I think the internet is just a passing fad, to be honest.
Do you?
And the sooner we get back to sort of newspapers and print media,
You did say
the
you wanted to
better.
do, didn't you say you wanted to do this podcast by fax? Or did
Yeah,
you
I
say
think
that
that
was
would.
that just a phone call that we did the other day where you'd rather do it by fax?
Yeah, I think technology is circular. It will come back round. Faxes will, pages, faxes. That will be the thing soon. Again.
Guess what? You know workshops? I'm segmenting, segueing. Workshops. Are you going to help me with this, or are you just going to stare at me like you don't know what I'm talking about?
Hey, Ali Bailey, have you heard? We're launching a workshop.
We are, me and you. Oh, that's a funny noise that just came out of your mouth. Yes, sounds good. What sort of workshop would it be, Damien, if me and you were to work together on a workshop?
What could possibly go wrong? We are launching, we have launched by now, Spine Races Training Weekend for early December, 6th, 7th, 8th of December near Alston. Genuinely, this is going to be great because we've got six-time spine finisher Matt Neal, who people probably won't know. He's quite quiet on the socials, but you might have heard that first bit. Six-time spine finisher Matt Neal. We've got hopefully Nikki Ligo, who's in charge of the checkpoints on the winter spine and a doctor. We got my friend Tim Laney, friend of the show, Tim Laney, who's
Is
a
Tim Laney a friend of the show? Does he listen to the show?
probably not, but we'll call him a
Oh,
friend of the show,
well.
who once ran into a cow on the spine race. It wouldn't move out of the way.
Oh, wow.
He's a very experienced mountain leader, done the spine, done the drag of the back.
And he wears a ne neckerchief like no one else. He's
Legend of the sport, one of
a
my oldest
very,
friends in the sport,
he's a natty dresser.
doesn't always interrupt me like some other of my friends. We've got all of them, plus you and Pickle and me, and I've done the spine a few times, and someone called Jack Scott. Scott Jack?
Our
Scott
adopted
Jack, is
son,
it?
Jack Scott. Yeah.
My spine
We're
son.
gonna have the ceremony there where we're
Got the
actually
ceremony.
the official adoption where we adopt him as his
Oh, that
parents.
okay. As long as we're
Yeah.
not giving out awards. Yes. So we put on a weekend. We're gonna have all that knowledge in the room. We can do some runs on the Pennine Way. And it's gonna be really good. I'm really confident it's gonna be brill.
So the point
Anything
of
else
this
to add?
is. The point of this is, listener, that if you are training for winter spine, or if you are not training for winter spine but thinking I'd quite like to have a look at the winter spine, or if you, like me, have gone I'm definitely never going to do the winter spine, but you really know that that means you are going to do it, then you can come to this workshop and you can just email me, go on my website, email me, and I will sort it out for you. It's going to be good. 2 nights in a bunkhouse, 3 days, four workshops, two runs, good after dinner talks, three course dinners, one course breakfast, second breakfast. Third
Tea.
breakfast, tea, coffee,
Tea. I
biscuits.
promise not to make tea for anyone after recent tea shaming.
Well, we're
Also,
making tea.
I'll do a talk on kit as well. That's one of the things. The Spine Race has 31 items of mandatory kit, not like the Tour de Géant at all. As I've pointed out to Lindley, we met Italian Lindley, didn't we?
Oh my God, there's an Italian Lindley. We didn't think it was possible, but it is.
There's an Italian Lindley.
Luigi Lindley.
So yeah, I'll talk a lot about kit, but yeah, we'll cover everything, anything once actually. Sleep strategy, nutrition, mindset, survival, yeah, socks,
Survival? Fucking hell.
survival skills.
How about handling disappointment? Will we be cuddling that? Cuddling? Will we be covering that?
Definitely not cuddling. Well, I'm very good at handling disappointment because I've been hanging out with you. We can cover disappointment. Yep.
Okay, perfect.
People will be
Honestly,
disappointed to
there's only
learn.
20 places on this thing, everybody. So if you do want to come, please do. Right, let's go into. I really want to have like a little jingle for Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame. It's a bit late though because we've only got one podcast left after this, so we haven't got a jingle, but we've got Hall of Fame coming up, listener. Hall of Fame, Hall of Shame, and Know it all. A quiz on the Pennine Way. Yay. What's your Hall of Fame?
Hall of Fame. I'm going to put race cruise in the Hall of Fame because at the tour I didn't have one, and it was a reminder how useful they are, but also, yeah, just how great people are to give up their time to basically, sort of shove food in someone's mouth, take their socks off, wipe their smelly armpits or worse. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah.
okay.
And worse.
Right.
And just the amount of time, the amount of tiredness, it, there's not, people say it's more stressful being in the crew than running. And in a way it is, because when you're running, it's quite a simple thing in your mind. You just keep going in a certain direction, following the little yellow flags. Whereas the crew's got to think, logistically about lots of different things, where to find pizza, or in some, in a foreign country as well sometimes. And yeah, it's impressive to see people give up their time to do that
It's
sort of thing.
exhausting, Damien. It's
Well,
exhausting. I probably drank 1,700 cappuccinos and ate many, many pastries, different types as well. I spent a lot of time in the car snoozing and being on Instagram, and oh God, I had to keep going to pizza places and getting pizza and then just testing the pizza to make sure it wasn't poisonous or kirsty. Oh, it was exhausting. Gelato, another problem. I kept having to eat gelato and ice cream to test it in all of the various places that we went. It was just a complete nightmare. Why didn't you have crew? Is it because nobody likes you?
yeah.
You did have crew, didn't you? But because you were man-faffing about going or not, the crew didn't come.
Yeah, I call my crew off. I call my crew off because I didn't want to mess them around.
I think it's quite impressive that you came fourth. Did you come fourth or fifth without crew? I think it's really impressive because it's so fucking hard. It was like, how many days was it? 3 days you were out there?
Yeah, kind of 3 and a bit. Yeah.
Yeah, without having, so all the stuff, so you had, the only stuff you had was the stuff that was in your bag and that was in your drop bag, which wasn't very much, if I'm honest, listener. Not very much in there. There was an
Yeah, I
exploded
mean.
Alpro yogurt in the drop bag, but it cast brown liquid over everything. But apart from that, there wasn't very much for you to eat, was there? But you didn't eat very much at all.
I got by. I got by.
Just. Yes, crews are great. We love crews. And also, so they're going to go in the Hall of Fame. Who's going in the Hall of Shame?
Ford, because they're sports washing. Like, what you've got to ask is, like, why are they sponsoring or partnering with a running race? And it's because they're trying to make themselves look good when really they're doing great harm by not decarbonizing as quickly as they should be. So they are trying to sell still lots and lots of ICE vehicles, and they're doing it by sort of partnering with an adventurous, exciting event. And we know, I've had conversations with Dacia, we know why they find UTMB appealing, and it's the word adventure, because they think their cars are sort of adventurous and they think the sport is adventurous, and they're trying to appeal to us to, yeah, sell us more cars. Both these companies make lots of SUVs. So yeah, Ford, you're in the Hall of Shame.
I've had a
Congratulations.
situation this week with some sports, which what I think might be sports washing.
Is that your
It's not to
smelly
do with my
running kit?
coats. I'm really sick of washing waterproof coats. It's such a faff.
Here's a question. Do you feel they're ever as waterproof again once you do
No,
that?
no, no. And I know from Innovate that the waterproof coat only has a certain amount of life. So if you scrunch the waterproof coat up and put it in a bag, it loses its waterproofness and it only has a certain amount of lives because just when you sweat from the inside as well, it damages the membranes on it. So you shouldn't be using your waterproof coat for anything other than rain. Don't use it, get a windproof coat for the colder days and use your waterproof coat for waterproofness. But oh, waterproof coats, man, they do my head in. Anyway, what was I going to say? So yeah, it's not just high carbon, is it? It's things like alcohol, which is something that's come into my peripheral in the last couple of weeks, is alcohol sponsors and sporting events. And I think that some of them are using the alcohol-free label, like the way that Ford uses the EV label to get in on sport and be like, hey, man, look at us, so you're alcohol-free. But actually, only 1% of our sales is alcohol-free, and the rest of it is alcohol. And if you see the word Heineken, then you automatically think, Heineken, not Heineken alcohol free. And it's something that is getting on my tits because it's entering ultra running. And a lot of the people that take part in this sport take part in it to because they maybe have had problems with other stuff in the past and they want to get away from those problems. Not all of us, but if you stand at the start line of an ultra, I'd say a good 40% of people have had some sort of mental health slash addiction slash problems in their life that they're using the sport to help them to manage. And as an addict, the last thing I want at the end of a race is to be reminded of booze, because I used racing to cover my alcoholism for a really, really long time. Because I thought that if when alcohol was presented to me at races, I was like, oh, it must be okay then. Because as long as I'm running and drinking, it's all right. Drinking, not all right. Running and drinking, all right. So that's one of the things that's really starting to get on my nerves, and I'm noticing more and more. Like Love Trails, for example, we've got a beer mile event that goes on for 7 hours, and it's just people running up and down drinking booze. How can that have a place at a wellness festival? I don't understand. I don't understand.
Well, the gate back to the sort of Game Changer sponsorship pledge, which is created by a group called Badvertising. Really, that's targeting high carbon sponsors, alcohol and gambling in all of sport. So they're trying to do a huge, very laudable thing. But yeah, all three of those areas are causing great harm in society. And yeah, I urge people to get along to the Game Changer sponsorship
Write to your
pledge.
local MP.
Well, or your local race.
Just join the Green Runners and pledge to actually do something about it, like fucking talk about it. Because if we all talk about it and make it and be like, we're not going to put up with this, then they won't do it. It's as simple as that. All you've got to do is say, we won't put up with this and not do that stuff or do something else and it will work, right?
And I mean, social media is sometimes more effective than like I think the polite thing to do is approach, especially if you respect an organization, is to approach them privately first. But social media is an effective place. Like, people don't like bad PR. But
I've
since you
approached the village gyms a number of times about their sign people up and get a bo 6 bottles of Prosecco, and I've had nothing back. And I've sent 3 emails to the head of marketing, and I've had nothing back at all. Might
Well,
have to leave the gym.
I would probably stop using them. I don't know.
Yeah, but they've got really good sauna, steam room. It's just a partnership. I'm going to
Well,
wear a t-shirt in the steam room that says, don't put booze at the gym or something.
or you can borrow my fuck off Ford one, and we could just change some of the wording.
Perfect. I'll just cross it out with a pen.
You did mention the Green Runners there, and I hope you don't mind mentioning we're launching a crowdfunding campaign for basically the whole big next chapter of the Green Runners. We've been going 2.5 years. We've got nearly 3,000 members now, but basically we can't really sort of do the work we want to do without some funding, basically to sort of fund some sort of part-time roles for people to do some work. And we are launching a crowdfunding campaign. We have just launched it, and it's going very well. I think we're up to nearly about 5 grand.
5 grand, nice.
Really, it's to help. I need a new sort of. There's a Dacia SUV I quite fancy. Really, it's to help me get one of those. But
You
if
need
there
to
is some
brand
left
it. You
over,
are going to brand it, though, aren't you? Green Runners, so everyone.
absolutely,
So
absolutely.
it's a business expense.
But if there is any left over, that will go towards the Green Runners doing great work, continuing their strong work out there. So I can't remember if you do show notes. You do show notes. If I could send you a link afterwards, grateful of anyone who can chip in and or share. Jasmine Paris put in 500 quid of her own money.
She, Jasmine Paris has got beef with me about how I cut and eat my pizza.
Well,
I don't
I
think I've ever
mean,
been quite so devastated in my life. She was looking at me across the lunch table. I thought she wants to talk to me because she's obviously read the book and thinks I'm cool. And she just went, "Why are you eating your pizza like that?" And I was
yeah,
like, "It's too
it's a
big for the
fair point.
plate." She just looked horrified.
The rest was too
Horrified.
frightened to say. I mean, she just said what we were all thinking.
Right. Ready for the pen, the quiz? This is the second quiz in the Hall or Nothing quiz series. Okay, the first quiz didn't go that well because my researcher, Pickle, had made a few errors in her research. Hadn't you, Pickle? Yeah, I just asked a few questions of some peoples and they got them wrong. So she got them wrong. Okay, but this one, I've done the research on
Is
this
that an
one.
apology, that just then?
Nope, it's not an apology. It's just a re it's reasoning. It's a statement.
This is why I
That's
come
what
on
it
this podcast, to basically be shown up, shamed, embarrassed, cancelled,
Oh, a little bit.
humiliated.
Oh, hang on a
Can't
minute.
wait.
How many guidebooks have you written on the Pennine Way?
Just one official
Right. And
guidebook.
how many times have you run on it?
Don't know. Six or seven.
Right, and how many
Liked
times
it.
have you FKT'd it?
Once.
And how many times have you won
Is
a
this
race
part of
on
the
it?
quiz? Is it, these are the questions.
How many
Oh.
times have you won a race on it?
Just once.
Okay, so you should know quite a lot about it, right? There's 10 questions, there's 10 points. Are you ready?
No. Yeah,
You
fire
can play
away.
along at home by simply pressing pause. Number one, the Pennine Way is the UK's first national trail. But how many national trails are there across England and Wales, and how many kilometres do they cover in total?
How many kilometers they cover in total? Come
How many are
on.
there? In how many are there first?
There were 12. We're not including the Great Trails in Scotland, are we? This is just England and Wales. Yep. So there were 12. It depends if you're including the whole England coast path.
Nope, we're not including that
Okay.
yet.
So there were 12. Are there more now? So the Wales coast path came along. I'm sticking with 12.
15. There's 15 national trails in the UK. I can't name them all, but
Technically, that wasn't a question about the Pennine
there are
Way.
15. How many kilometres do you reckon they span, the trails?
9,026.
I talk about this a lot because of this thing that I want to do, and I can't believe you don't listen to me.
9,026.
No, 4,000 kilometres. Right, that was a 0 points. I'm just going to write the words, that number zero. It's a bit like the O that was missing off of your banner when I took that photo. Right, what date and where was the official opening ceremony for the Pennine Way?
So 2014 was the 50th anniversary. Oh, so 50 years before that.
Which was when?
Oh, maths. 64.
Was
Come
it?
on.
Where was it? Where was the official
He dealt with it.
ceremony? No, I'll give you a
In the
clue.
scout.
It was the place where I ruined your bivvy.
Malham.
Yes, it was in Malham, 24th of April, 1965, not 4, 1 year out. Stop Googling. It's all correct. I got this from the British Mountaineering Council's 50 Best Facts about the Pennine Way.
Oh,
In
some of them are hard.
1989, Mike Hartley set the first record for completion of the Pennine Way, running the route in 2 days, 17 hours, and 15 seconds. He stopped only once for 18 minutes. What did he stop for?
He definitely changed his shoes. I think he had a sleep. Yeah, one sleep.
No.
Chips, fish and chips in
Yes!
Hawes.
Yes, fish
Fish and
and
chips in
chips, but
Hawes.
in Alston. It was in Alston. But he stopped for fish and chips in Alston. He didn't go to sleep.
All right, can I have a point for that? It's just that the fish and chips in Hawes are excellent. I've never had the fish and chips in Alston, I don't think.
Fish and chips and Hawes, where'd you get them from?
On the main road, there's a fish and chip shop.
Oh, yeah, there's some quite nice cafes down there, isn't there? I sat in a cafe for quite a long time in Hawes. That's where I found Chris King's Land Rover keys.
I like Hawes.
Do you? That explains everything. Is that where you're trying to raise that money for the Green Runners to pay for your adventures with Hawes in
My
Hawes?
SUVs and my horse.
Right. The full route of the Pennine Way navigates 287 gates and 204 bridges. But what bridge did Limp Bizkit make famous in their year 2000 rager, Rollin'?
Either way, it was a bridge too far.
Oh, no.
Was it over some troubled waters?
No. Do you not know what bridge they sing about in Rollin'? They
You
ask you
said
to take it
2004.
to
I
a
was
certain
travelling that year.
bridge.
I'm allowed to not have any musical knowledge for that year. I was probably in Argentina.
Oh my God. So every time Damien doesn't know a song, he says, I was in Australia. Like as if they didn't have music in Australia. Oh no, I don't know this song. I was in Australia.
They didn't really in Argentina. They just played that ketchup song. Do you remember the ketchup
Oh
song? That was all
God.
they played.
The last Ketchup song. Fucking
Yeah.
hell. The answer
All
to
right, I
that
don't know.
is. The answer to that is the Matthews Bridge.
I think technically it's not a Pennine Way question.
Take it to the Matthews Bridge. This is a music podcast and a running podcast. So what I've done is I have mishmashed them together. Mismashed, mashed them.
Mismatched.
What
We're a
does David
mismatch.
Brent call it? Synergy. Top Withens, a ruined farmhouse visited by the Pennine Way. Apparently, Top Withens is visited by the Pennine Way. is said to have been the inspiration for the Earnshaw family house in Emily Bronte's Wuthering Heights. But how old was Kate Bush when she wrote the song of the same name?
Probably only about 20, 21,
Oh, close.
19,
Close.
22. Can
18. It was 18. It was 18.
I get half a point?
I'm actually being quite nice to you today. I'm giving you little half points for everything. Almost like I feel sorry for you. Six. Question six. The original idea for the Pennine Way was first mooted by Walker and journalist Tom Stevenson in a 1935 article for the Daily Herald. He famously titled the article Wanted, A Long Green Trail. But what was his ulterior motive for designing such a piece of shit route?
I know this. So around this time, us common folk, I appreciate with my accent, I may not sound like common folk, weren't allowed up on the moors because they were privately owned by gamekeeping, sorry, yeah, game rich, rich scum. And
Rich scum
they weren't,
or
and people weren't
landowners.
allowed on the uplands. So it was to really his ulterior motive was to open up the moorlands and the upland areas for just ramblers, for people, especially working folk from Manchester and so on, to go rambling. Hence why the mass trespass happened in 1932, which is one of the things I really do love about the Pennine Way, because mass trespass was a moment of civil resistance where just people disobeyed the law, got arrested, trespassed intentionally, and the laws changed because of it. People put in prison. And this is what Extinction Rebellion have been trying to do, use the same sort of civil resistance ideas. So that's why, partly why I love the Pennine Way is relationship with the mass trespass. Do I get a point?
Get 10. 10 points. 10
Woo!
points. Well done. I like that too. I like it up there. I like it up at Kinder. It makes me feel like there was something very special going on up there because it's got like a freedom element to it, hasn't it? It's
Yeah,
exciting.
it's really powerful.
Pickle likes it up there too. She likes to do mass trespasses where the sheep are. Question seven. Nickel Chair sits opposite High Cup Nick, but who or what was Nickel Chair named after?
A local cobbler.
Oh my God, you're so good at this. This is so good. Yes, go on. A local cobbler
He
who.
apparently used to sit there and repair the shoes up there, is the story.
Apparently, he used to sit up there and practice a bit of extreme cobbling on top of it for a bet. And I have to say that I think at that point in the Pennine Way, that could actually be a niche thing to do because if your shoes are going to fall to bits, it's going to be up in that area, isn't it?
Just while we're on that subject, actually, during the spine race, probably about 2016, 2017, I don't know who it was, but step forward if it was you, but someone's shoes were falling apart during the spine race. They got on their phone, ordered a new pair of shoes to a checkpoint, went on Amazon, ordered shoes to a checkpoint ahead of them, which I think at the time was Middleton and Teesdale. And when they got there, they had a new pair of shoes to carry on in the race, which
Is
I
that
thought was.
allowed? Brewed by Amazon.
Well, they weren't disqualified, I don't think. I mean, the tour might clamp down if Francois Dehaene was running. I thought that was especially inventive. I might not have thought of that.
I suppose Amazon is available to everybody, isn't it? As long as you've got an account.
Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting. I like that a lot.
Shoe facts.
Question eight. There are 249 styles on the Pennine Way. But where was the video for pop star Harry Styles' 2017 super hit Sign of the Time shot?
In your garden.
Oh.
I don't even know that song.
Are you joking? You've got
I'm
a teenage
approaching
daughter.
50. I'm a dad.
Yeah, so you should know that
I
song.
don't think she likes him.
I think she
I'm
does. Everybody does. I think you do as well. Everybody loves Harry Styles. It's ingrained in our DNA.
Hartlepool.
No, the answer is the Isle of Skye. It's really worth watching that video because it is funny because he's like flying through the air across the Kerrang. It's funny.
I'm really embarrassed that I did not know the answer to that Pennine Way question.
It is a Pennine Way question. Question nine. The Tan Hill Inn is Britain's highest pub, sitting at the halfway point of the Pennine Way and at 1,732 verts above sea level. But why is John Kelly so much faster than you?
Kentucky Fried Chicken tried to sue the Town Hill Inn,
Interesting
possibly because they
deflection.
had something called the Family Feast or something, and they discovered it. And the Town Hill, the letter arrived near April Fool's Day, so the Town Hill thought it was an April Fool's prank. Thankfully, KFC realized this was really bad PR and withdrew their libel case. What was the question?
The Town Hill Inn is Britain's highest pub, sitting at the halfway point of the Pennine Way
I
at
don't really know what the question's going. In
1,732 vertz
winter,
above sea level.
at risk of setting off my male ego chimp, in winter have been significantly faster than John Kelly. In the summer, I haven't been.
But why is John Kelly so much faster than you?
He's a better athlete and
Wrong.
first.
Little Debbies and Muddy Buddies.
That is the secret.
He loves his Little Debbies and his Muddy Buddies, doesn't he? There are his snacks of choice. Number 10. This is the last one. Greg's Hut at Crossfell is the highest bothy in England and was founded in memory of John Gregory, who was killed in a climbing accident in the Alps in 1968. But what would you expect to see if old Greg opened the door and lifted up his skirt?
Gosh.
Is a Mighty Boosh question.
Oh, I was traveling.
Right. The answer is his mangina.
I must admit, I Mighty Boosh. I like the other main guy, Nigel.
No, not Nigel. You're talking about the one that's not Noel Fielding, aren't you?
Yeah, I like him.
Sometimes I see us as the Mighty Boosh guys.
You got Noel Fielding-ish hair.
I have, correct, and you are not funny and slightly sad, a bit like the other one. So, last question: have you ever drunk Baileys from a shoe?
Not that I recall,
No,
but
that's
no,
an old
it's
Greg
really
question.
boring.
Okay, last things last, Correspondence Corner.
It's correspondence in a corner. It's Correspondence Corner.
How many did I? No, I don't want to know. Yes, Correspondence Corner. Moving on
Right,
quickly.
you got 7 out of 10 because
Oh,
I gave you some extra points for things.
thanks.
Right, Correspondence Corner. That was actually quite good. I'm very impressed. I am quite impressed that you got some of those because they were quite factual and quite difficult. I am impressed. Slight impressed. Yes. Yeah. Paddy Gowler asks, post race, how do you transition back to training at your normal volume? I've just finished a 75-kilometer race and want to know how best to recover from that and get back to my normal level again. I'd typically be running between 60 and 80 kilometers a week. Exclamation mark.
Well, yeah, this is topical for me. I'm going through this process at the moment. So I guess for my bigger races, it's 100 or 200 miles. So I do take roughly a week off. I do have a coach, and yeah, he's putting usually at least 6 days of no running. And possibly you do one day of sort of optional cross training to just get things spinning before you try a run. Then it's usually a sort of 5 mile super easy. Really, you're just testing if there's any. Yeah, physical issues. Is anything? Sometimes you feel okay and you run. And like at the moment, I've got a very slight ankle thing. So 2 or 3 days of just probably less than an hour at the most, really easy run. Then usually, actually, well, quite often, yeah, another day off. But really, in all that time, in that first week, the two things to really concentrate on are sleep and eating enough. Probably even for a 75K race, you've probably gone into a calorie deficit. So you want to the body's not going to repair if it doesn't have the calories, basically. So simply if you're under fueling your body, it sort of goes into something as of a survival mode, and it's not going to send blood and stuff out, enough of the nutrients and blood out to, I don't know, the ankle area or something like that. So sleeping, eating, light exercise. I do think walking's a really good thing.
Should get a
I go on,
dog.
I was going to say dog walks, cat walks as well, allowed. Squirrel walks. That's a really good way to, yeah, low impact exercise. We do think like light exercise could speed things up. But yeah, I'd say a week of pretty much no running, then really gingerly sort of trying some running again.
When do you think he'll get back up to his normal level? Normal, inverted commas.
So my coach has actually put like my third week, it looks normalish. The long, like in the week, it looks normalish, as in I am getting back to workouts and strides, because otherwise you just get into that. Like you are slower after a big race, you're basically slower. You've slowed yourself down. So definitely strides are something to really get back into, and some faster work, like 1 minute intervals, very short hill reps. But long runs are staying quite short for a while. There's no need, like I've personally, I've just done, well, and this person's just done 75K. They don't need to be back running 20 milers or probably even 15 or 16 miles for quite a few weeks. There's no real benefit there other than just knackering yourself out. So I would be concentrating on, yeah, speed and almost biomechanical work.
Don't you just sometimes want a fucking rest?
Yeah, well, I had a week.
No. This is hello, my name's Ali and I'm the voice of reason because I'm not Damien and I am a mid to back of pack average amateur fun runner. I would take a couple of weeks off. That's what I would do because I respect my body and I'm not as good as you. And I think it's different for everybody. And I think normal, getting back to normal, what is normal? Because if you've been training for a 75K race, you've been on a 75K race plan, right? So when I put my athletes into like taking your clothes off, when I put my athletes into what do we call it? Like maintenance mode. If they're not doing anything, then I'll literally say to them, do like 20 to 30 miles a week, enjoy yourself, go and have some adventures, chill the fuck out, do one interval session a week, and go to the gym. Go sit in saunas, have a nice time, get yourself strong. That's basically what I tell them to do. I don't think that there's any thing to be gained, and I don't think it's a badge of honour to be getting back to racing very, very quickly or getting back up to your normal level, in inverted commas, very, very quickly after a race. I think a lot of people think it's a sign of resilience or being double hard bastard or being super fit, but actually it can just be ego. And I think you need to balance that. I do, because it's your hobby at the end of the day, Paddy, isn't it? It's not your job. And you don't have, I doubt you've got another race that's imminent. And if you do, then don't. That's what I'd say. It's just a bit different. Me and Damien are different.
Well, actually, it's not that different because I was given a run for Saturday. Like, so I did less. I think it was on Sunday I was meant to do 10 miles. I just did six. And on Saturday, actually, I was meant to run about 10 miles and I didn't run at all because I just didn't have an opportunity to
You
relate with
lazy bastard.
the boss. So I think it is almost a time to, yeah, use that cliche of listen to your body. And so I am doing, yeah, it's a time when I'm not as obedient to the plan. Also, I have two different things of measuring it. Like, partly it's sort of if you can get some objective metrics such as your watch. So HRV, I do follow quite a lot. Mine's still low.
Do you follow off your watch? Have you got a heart rate monitor?
Well, both. So HRV just on my watch and then resting heart rate. I do put the chest strap on.
You put the
Well,
strap
on the
on.
runs,
You use a strap on.
I use a strap on regularly, Ali. Yes,
Okay.
I find it very satisfying. So you got the data, but technology is always a guide, not a rule. But there's also like, how are you feeling? Like, how do you feel? Which of course is much more subjective, but sometimes is a better thing. So you got the two things side by side. So I know I don't feel 100%. I'm not too f well. I don't know how far off I am, but I've got two things at the moment saying like my watch is saying I'm low, and I don't feel fully energetic or sharp, as wildly sharp as I normally am, as you could probably tell. So there's, yeah, at least two things to monitor there. And yeah, I think you're totally right. There's not a sentence I'll say often, in terms of like trying to remember what is it you love about running, because you've probably been very disciplined towards a bigger goal. And then it's like, I don't know, do you love running in woods? Do you like undulating country lanes? Try and get back to just, yeah, remembering. If you've been very disciplined about your training, you might have neglected some of that almost more joyful running. So yeah, remind yourself what you enjoy.
Do something nice. Go sit in the sauna. Go sit in the steam room. Go
I have
have a
done that. I've
massage.
done that twice. I've done two saunas.
You've had more saunas than that, mate. I put you in a sauna in Courmayeur for quite a long time. Left you
Oh,
there
there's
because
that
you're
as well.
annoying. And then you could shut the door and then you couldn't hear him fucking yabbering on about his fucking race. Lock him in a hot box. Make him go to sleep in there. Hope he doesn't come out. All right, Paddy, that was quite good, wasn't it? You lucky bastard with that great response. Pickle's going mad downstairs. She's got something to say about this. Dave via email. Dear Ultrasound System team. Picking up on the dynamic pricing thread, I'd like to discuss pricing in general. And you'll probably like this because it's mostly UTMB bashing. It's not UTMB we're bashing, it's everything about them. I really want to do a mountain race near Eriri. So I looked at some options. This is interesting. UTMB Snowdonia, 50K, £169 plus service fees of £13.52 equals £182.52. Price per kilometre, £3.65. per kilometre. Xterra Snowdonia's 57k, £94. Booking fee £3.92, £98.91. Price per kilometre £1.74. GB Ultra's Wales 50 miles. So all of these are actually longer than UTMB, which is 80k. Oh no, 80k is longer. 109, £109, no fees. Price per kilometre, £1.36. As you can see, Xterra and GB Ultras are ballpark comparable, while UTMB, never saw this coming, is more than twice the cost per kilometre of the others. I have two main questions. How on earth would UTS seek to justify this difference in terms of the quality of the product? Because from what I've read from people's experiences, it ain't all that. Running out of water, aid station, etc. Second question, is trail and ultra racing... Second question is, trail and ultra races are hugely reliant on the support of armies of volunteers. Why on earth would anyone continue to volunteer for UTMB branded races when they're so highly priced? Now, we can't answer the question about why UTS are doing that, and it is twice as much per kilometre. However, Damien, I would like to ask you what you think about this price per kilometre malarkey. Have you ever worked out races like that?
No. Well, the thing that jumps out at me is like Paddy Buckley round. Totally free, or
no, it isn't.
Just...
It's not. This is interesting. It's not free because you've got a crew. You've got how many legs have you got in Paddy Buckley? No, how many legs have you got in Paddy Buckley?
Five.
Five, right? So you've got five legs. So you've got five different amounts of food in the car. You've got petrol, people, time. Time is not free. You've got this thing about crewing is really interesting because on Tour de Gion, we were buying Kirsty everything that she wanted, and we ended up having to have the Splitwise account where we all put all of the money that we spent into the Splitwise account, and it ended up being hundreds of pounds worth of stuff that we were buying for her, plus the petrol and plus the fees to get through the tolls. God, the fucking tolls in Italy are mad. It's not free. Paddy Buckley's not free. It might be free to you, and you might go and do it by yourself, but anyone doing Paddy Buckley usually has support and they have to pay for it in some way.
They don't. You could do Paddy Buckley over 2 or 3 days. What I mean is you can go and run in these places without signing up for a race and without paying money. Yeah, all right, technically you need to get there. You need some snacks for the hill. All right, I get your point. It's not totally free, but it's much cheaper. So you don't have to do races at all. But in terms of how it's justified, I suppose UTMB would try and say, hey, we're a big UTMB event. We've got a competitive field. Blah blah blah.
What does that mean? We've got a competitive field. I know what that fucking means. You guys, your entry fee is paying for the elites because they don't pay. That's what that means.
Maybe. I mean, to some people that's appealing, but I'm not here to defend UTMB whatsoever. I'm not a fan like you. So I would just say,
like me. Oh no, I thought you meant I'm not a fan. Like I was a fan. I'm like fucking not a fan of UTMB. You big tit.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't, I would say to anyone, yeah, if you don't like the prices, don't pay it. I mean, they will continue. The thing is, people will be paying that. That's why they can do it. Like,
remember that there's the precious stones to collect. That UTMB have the precious imaginary stones that you have to collect. So I guess that
in my garden, anyone who wants some stones, I'll pick them in the garden and post them.
Me and Damon will be giving away stones, UTMB stones, at that workshop. We'll be giving away bags of them.
Bags of stones. Yep. Yeah, but we don't need to do these races at all. You can go and have a fun adventure on your own or with your mates for a lot less, I would say. So yeah, I mean, races will listen to the money basically.
Basically, vote with your feet and your credit cards and don't enter them.
Yeah.
What's interesting is that UTMB, since obviously bought the Arc or have taken the Arc, and the Arc 100 still hasn't sold out, which is interesting because it sells out usually in minutes. But I think that's because they've got a lot more people in it as well. But I think that this is a case of if you support these races with a higher price point, then other races will have to put their price points up, or they will put their price points up because the market, it's a little bit like coaching. I talk to people a lot about how much I charge for coaching. And it's like, if you charge less, then you're doing a disservice to coaches because you're saying you're basically taking down the value of their coaching. But with this, I think it's interesting because I'm not sure what more you would get from UTMB than you would get from GB Ultras, to be quite frank. In support, I know that 50k last year had a whole aid station missing because I spoke to a guy that did it, and he was like, "Yeah, there was no aid station for 25 kilometers because they didn't actually have the agreement in place, so they had to get rid of it." So I would be pretty fucking pissed off. Plus, on top of that, the UTMB UTS stuff, you have to pay for parking, You have to pay for a load of other things that they don't tell you about until 2 weeks before the race. So that's fun.
So you have to turn up a week early to register?
Mm-hmm. You have to turn up a week early to register and you have to sleep outside. You have to sleep in a UTMB branded tent and get a UTMB tattoo on your forehead. So thanks, Dave, doting husband, father of two, who prioritises getting up fucking early in the morning to do my running. I think that that's a dig at Paul Albin, but I'm not quite sure. Lastly, do you want to read the last one?
Sure. This is Dawn Richard. Hi, Aaron. Oh, it's no, I don't want to read.
Go on, you read one.
Listener, it's not about vegan semen, but hi. This is it. I ran my first ultra last weekend, and this is an email of appreciation for you, Ali. It was a small 50k race, 5 trails ultra, and I was last from about 20k in. It really got to my head, and I felt like quitting. For the next listener, if only you could see Ali's face at the moment, she's very, very happy.
And you're not very good at reading these out, are you?
No, but if I don't, I felt like quitting for the next 20k. But remembering you talking about being a back of the pack runner really helped me get through. I ended up passing the guy in front and finishing strong with a grin on my face. Now I know roughly what to expect. I am buzzing to get better and maybe go longer.
What a nice way to end the pod. A bit of inspiration for the nation from Dawn Richards via Linktree. I love those stories. Keep them coming, especially when they're appreciated. Especially when they're showing appreciation for me, nobody else, because I just like to talk about myself. But in all seriousness, well done, Dawn. Like, being last is good because, one, you're getting all that money for your kilometres. Two, shows more endurance, being out there for 6 hours. And I would like to point this out to you, Damien, that Kirsty was out for twice as long as you, but I think that showed a bit more endurance in you.
Yeah.
The longer you're out there, the more fucking endurance you're showing. And that whole thing of not caring where you are and actually just enjoying being in the moment of the race is magical. And I think that Dawn Richards is an inspiration to us all. So be more like Dawn Richards, everybody.
I agree.
What would you do if you were in a race and you thought you were going to come like in the top three or four, and then it became quite obvious that you weren't going to come in the top three or four? Would you pull out or would you continue?
I just quit straight away, Ali. That's what us elite runners do. I just quit. Yeah, can't be bothered.
Would it be, in all seriousness, is it because you're worried about your points, your ITRA points, or is it because of your ego, or would you not do that? Because you've not DNF many races, have you?
No, I have two DNFs. One was an injury. The other one was a mental failing at UTMB, my fifth UTMB. Really, I got badly underfueled and simply could not think of any good reason to continue. I'd just done it too many times, so I just couldn't think of a reason to carry on. And I was curious. I was actually curious. I was like, "What does a DNF feel like?" I think I might do one now. Yeah, every other fucker has. I think I only know one elite runner. I think, as far as I know, it's only Sophie Woods / Sophie Grant, who's one of the toughest people I know. I think she, like, correct me if I'm wrong. Message in. She's the only elite runner I think I know who's not DNF'd, you know, after doing it for several years. But yeah, I've got to. No, I mean, I too. To me, it's still important to finish, I suppose. And you realign, you reset your goals and go, no, there's value in finishing. And, you know, unless there's going to be some long term injury. So I've always still got it done other than those two instances. And one of them, I definitely did the right thing. Yeah, it's important to me to finish.
Right, thanks, listener, for listening. That's been quite the interesting. I think it's been quite an interesting podcast. Well done, us. Brilliant. Excellent work, as always. Next week, I'll be joined by my coach, Holly Stables.
Are you giving her a mean quiz?
No, I wouldn't give her a quiz. I respect her too much for that.
Mean quizzes?
It's not a mean quiz. It was a good quiz. She came out of it quite well. Don't you think you came out of it well?
I'm not sure.
You're going to be okay for the rest of the day.
No, I usually just, I'm so exhausted after these, I just go back to bed and just cry.
You can
cry.
Do that
just
because you're a professional athlete. So
cuddle up with my teddy in the fetal position, just sob for 3 or 4 hours. I'll often wake up, I've wet the bed. Put that on Instagram.
Look at your book sales. We actually haven't sold any, so it's not actually made any difference to your life.
Actually, that wasn't the message we got out in Cormier, where some of the Vertebrate publishing team were. It wasn't what they said, Ali, was it? Wasn't what they said.
And that's the end of the podcast. No, it wasn't. It was I in Cornwall. I got news that I've sold nearly 10,000 books in under a year.
Still a long way behind me. I think it was the audio. Yeah, I can't remember the exact. Well, this is just, yeah, this probably isn't interesting to anyone else, but
No, it isn't. It's just a silly fight that we like to have,
just
isn't
be
it?
aware, listener. Yeah, the message Ali puts out there isn't always the truth on various.
When are you talking to a script writer who's going to turn your book into a film? Because I spoke to mine on Monday. When are you talking to yours?
I'm doing my own, so I'm talking to one all the time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Okay, listener, we will speak to you next week. We love you. Bye.
Bye.